It's important to know what your company's worth. It's equally important, if not more so important, to know what you can do to make your company better.
This is Frankly MSP, where managed service providers get real.
Hey, this is Jennifer Tribe, and you're listening to episode 65 of Frankly MSP, the podcast for managed service providers who want to boost their productivity, efficiency, and profitability. We are back from a short spring summer break with some new episodes and some new guests for you. I also have some news to share. Starting in August, a couple of episodes from now, we're going to be changing the name of the podcast to Frankly IT. So we're not going to be Frankly MSP for very much longer. We're going to be Frankly IT. Why are we making that change? Well, we're learning from our audience and the people we talk to day in and day out that Ovic's focus on productivity and efficiency is helpful to IT teams and IT leaders in all kinds of environments. So that definitely includes MSPs, and it also includes in-house IT teams and different kinds of service providers. So the new podcast will have the same format, same host, that's me, same polar bear on the cover art, and we'll still be focusing on how to improve productivity and efficiency for your team. What's changing is that we'll be talking about those things in the context of IT teams within any kind of organization. That does mean we'll stop focusing on topics that exclusively appeal to MSPs, like how to sell and market managed services, but we're bringing in some new topics that I think you'll really enjoy. So the kind of stuff we're going to be exploring, how to build and manage a high-performing IT team, ways to optimize your service desk or help desk, best practices for IT project management, systems, processes, automation, and productivity hacks for helping your technical team do more with less, effective network management in an age when everything relies on being connected, and technology, business, and industry trends that are changing the way we all work. There's so much to explore here, and I'm excited. I'm looking forward to sharing the Frankly IT podcast with you starting August 6th. In the meantime, for this episode, one of the last is Frankly MSP, I wanted to bring you some powerful MSP-focused content just for you, and I think Linda Rose, our guest today, is just the person to do it. Linda is the author of a book called Get Acquired for Millions, a roadmap for technology service providers to maximize company value. She herself has founded and sold multiple technology companies, and she now spends her time brokering deals for others. Linda shared a copy of her book with me, and this thing is jam-packed with, I think, everything you'd need to know about preparing your MSP for sale and navigating your way through the deal. There are sections on knowing what you want from a deal, understanding deal structure, evaluating your financial fitness, finding the right accountant and lawyer. I mean, this thing is packed. Today, Linda and I are going to dig into a couple of those pieces, but obviously, if this topic interests you, you'll want to check out her book for the full story. I will, of course, put a link to the book in today's show notes at ovic.com/franklymsp/065. And stay tuned, because during the interview, Linda will be giving out access to a free assessment that will tell you the estimated value of your MSP right now and where you need to improve if you want that estimate to be higher. Linda has also been monitoring the M&A, the mergers and acquisitions market, for service providers during COVID-19, and she has some really awesome data and insights to share on how the pandemic has affected the market. So man, we've got a lot to cover. We better get started.
You're listening to Frankly MSP, brought to you by Ovic Networks.
Hi, Linda. Welcome to Frankly MSP.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you today?
I'm great. Back in January, I did an interview with an MSP who was buying other MSPs. And so that chat was really focused on what to look for when you're buying a company and how to negotiate with sellers and how to merge or integrate companies after the acquisition. But today we're going to look at the transaction from the other side of the table, from the perspective of an MSP who may be looking to sell. So I guess the first question I have for you is, how do you know if you're even ready to sell?
I think you just feel it in your gut. You know when it's time. There could be a variety of different things. I mean, there's the 5 D's, death, divorce, dysfunctional partner relationship. I forgot what the other two were, but barring those, I think you just kind of know when you feel like either you just want to move on and do something else, or you feel like you've taken it to a point where you probably can't take it any further and would like to be part of something larger. So it's just a gut feeling. You just kind of know. The question is, are you really ready to sell? And that's, I think, what we're going to talk about today.
So what are some of the things that you need to do mentally, financially, corporately to think about getting yourself ready to sell?
Well, I think most people don't realize it does take some time to prepare your company to be sold. I mean, some people do it very quickly, but they typically are not selling for their maximum value. And so understanding what you need to do in advance really will help increase that company value that you get in the end. And I think the first thing that I would like to start with, or I see most people kind of a little bit remiss on, is their financial reporting. And a lot of MSPs still today use cash basis financials, or there's a combination of cash and accrual, but it's not truly full accrual accounting. The second thing I see is just really not accurately stating cost of goods sold. There'll be some expenses that really should be above the line in cost of goods sold, and instead they're below in the sales, marketing, and admin. And that doesn't really give you a true gross profit margin. And many times when a buyer comes in and looks at your financials, they give you an offer, a tentative offer, based upon not only your bottom line, but your gross profit margin. And if they come in and do due diligence and realize that your cost of sold is not accurately stated, then that devalues the deal. And that's when people get upset. So that's part of it. Then I think the third really important thing is to know which kind of buyer you want to appeal to. And people go, what? There's multiple types of buyers. And there really are. There are those other partners, which I would call strategic buyers, that are just like you, competitors, people that are either in your neighborhood or other parts of the country that do what you do or have a complementary product to your product. Those would be strategic buyers. And then you have this other group, which has totally entered into this MSP space, and it has entered in at a lower price point in the sense that private equity groups, that second group, would not have looked at an MSP that was less than $5 million in revenue. And now they are, because they're really making a lot of acquisitions in the IT space and recognize that a lot of these larger MSPs have already been purchased. So they'll acquire an MSP and tuck it into a group, a portfolio company that they may have acquired in the past. And oddly enough, these groups look at different things, and understanding what they look at and what they value is important, and knowing which group do you want to appeal to. Or if you want to appeal to both, you need to highlight the certain aspects. So those are, I would say, the top things that most people don't really recognize and work on prior to selling their company.
Let's dig into the different types of buyers. You said they look for different things. So what are equity buyers looking for?
Private equity firms want to see that this can be a self-sustained, self-running company, meaning you have a great sales process that's connected to your ticketing system, which is connected to your accounting system. You have processes and procedures that people can rely on. You have a strong management team and a strong sales and marketing team. Very important for them, because many times they buy a company and they just leave the entire management team in place to run it, and they're just making cash investments to help grow the company. Versus a strategic buyer, they probably don't care as much about your management team. They certainly don't care a whole lot about your marketing team, because if you think about it, if they're going to acquire you, they're going to probably use their own marketing people, move on to their CRM system, probably move on to their accounting system. So a lot of that admin costs and marketing costs, they're not as interested in that, but they are interested in gross profit margins. So, and they are interested in the technical team and buying that human capital. So different people look for different things.
So it sounds like if you were a CEO or an owner who was looking to sell, knowing what you wanted your involvement to be after the sale would be key there, because it sounds like with private equity, maybe you would be continuing to run the company and it would continue to have the name that it's always had. But on the other side of the coin, it might be something where you depart after a year and much of your team also gets let go.
Yes. Now, what's interesting, Jennifer, is private equity firms can also act like strategics. That was the case in my case, where I actually sold to a private equity firm, but I was tucked in under a portfolio company. So they had already made an acquisition actually just a few months prior to my company that was sort of their portfolio company. And they were basically buying around that company and strengthening that company. So even though my company was acquired by a private equity firm, it acted more like a strategic. So like within 5 months, my entire marketing department was canned, so to speak. Some of my admin staff was let go. We moved from our accounting system to their accounting system. So it was as if we were acquired by strategic. So it's really important to understand, if you are talking to a private equity firm and you want to be that lead portfolio company, that you go in asking those questions. I think most sellers are just not educated enough to know that going into the game.
You also mentioned that one of the things that can trip people up is their accounting and their financials. So for example, you said underestimating cost of goods sold or underreporting cost of goods sold. So is that really just a matter of working with an accountant and getting things put into different buckets? Or does it also require some sort of change to how you actually run the business?
It's not so much a change on how you run the business other than being able to report people's time through some sort of application, which most people have. But it really is about aligning with a CPA or somebody to really accurately state your financial statements. The other thing I see very common with MSPs and actually many channel partners, not just MSPs, is that they'll sell a 12-month contract and recognize all that revenue in that month that they sold it, when in actuality, they need to defer that revenue over the next 12 months and really recognize that revenue over that period of time. The other thing I see, and by the way, Jennifer, I'm working currently with a $70 million bar who up until a year ago was on QuickBooks. You see some of these large companies grow, and they stay on their QuickBooks, which for the most part, everybody's running QuickBooks on a cash basis. They went from QuickBooks to NetSuite, and that was quite a change for them. Not only did they upgrade their accounting system, but they actually had to upgrade their accounting department so that they had people that truly knew how to run an accrual-based financial system. I don't recommend waiting that long before you make that switch. And honestly, I think if your revenues are above $2 million, you should be full accrual accounting. Don't wait, because the longer you wait, the harder it is to do. In this instance, it took us a year to prepare that company to sell for that reason alone, because they were still running cash basis financials, which no investor wanted to see because there were so many peaks and valleys in the bottom line based upon when the cash came in and when the cash went out. So accrual-based financials is so important. And the sooner you can get that going, the better off you'll be.
Yeah, a year is a long time to fix that one thing. So what are some other things that you see MSPs getting wrong or not quite doing right when they're getting ready to sell or thinking, I'm going to sell, so this is what I'm going to do?
I think the other thing too is they confuse growing top-line revenue and bottom-line revenue with growing the value of their company. I talk about this a lot at different conferences, and I'm like, you know what? I can take two $5 million MSPs, or call it two $2 million MSPs. And if MSP number one just grows top line revenue and MSP number two doesn't grow top line revenue, but focuses more on growing reoccurring revenue, even though the revenues might be the same for both MSPs, it's the MSP that grew the recurring revenue that's going to be more valuable in the end. So where everybody's focused on growing top-line revenue and maintaining bottom-line profitability, I really encourage people, especially as they're looking at a sale down the road, is to really think about growing that recurring revenue more, because ultimately, at the end of the day, that actually will provide more value and give you a higher selling price than somebody that is just focused on top-line revenue, assuming all of it's not already recurring revenue. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. What I'm also hearing in that is that buyers aren't really looking for break-fix business. So if you've got a good chunk of your business in break-fix, you're going to want to move that away. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. Break-fix is just not where it's at anymore. And I think everybody knows that for the most part.
So we talked about moving into more reoccurring revenue and not just growing top line, but what about growing profit margin? Like, what if you kept your sales steady but worked on back-end efficiency? Would that be a factor as well?
Yes, it would. There's this thing called the Rule of 40. I wrote a blog post on it. We can link to it in the show notes. But the Rule of 40 is this. You want to have your year-over-year revenue increase plus your bottom line. And these are as percentages equal 40. So for example, if your year-over-year increase was 20%, you want to make sure your bottom line is at 20% as well, because 20% top line plus 20% bottom line growth is 40. Or another example, which is more common, what we see at MSPs is year-over-year growth is like 25% and their bottom line net income is at 15%. So the 25 plus the 15 equals 40. That rule of 40 is very prominent, especially in the SaaS industries. So especially as you get more into that recurring revenue, you want to kind of try to hit that rule of 40 as much as you can. Now, let's say you're off a percentage or two here or there, that's fine, but that's really what you should be looking for. That reminds me of something we talked about earlier here in terms of when is it time to sell. It's when that top line revenue also is getting harder to maintain the increase, or if you start seeing it flattening out. Now, I know we're in a very interesting time right now with COVID, and that throws a lot of this out the door. But prior to that, if you saw your top line revenue flattening, maybe it means that it's just time for a change or time to rethink things. I wouldn't want it to start declining before you decide it's time to sell, because then a buyer is going to look at you and going, well, what's happening here? So it's a bit of a red flag. You definitely want to be selling, obviously, on the upswing versus when you start flattening out and heading downward.
You're listening to Frankly MSP, brought to you by Avik Networks.
So you mentioned COVID in your book, which was published not long before the pandemic hit. You mentioned a number of economic factors that at that time were creating a great environment for MSPs who wanted to sell. So you mentioned there was a ton of private money, so that's that equity money sitting on the sidelines, cheap access to debt, and a growing US economy. Obviously, the coronavirus has changed a lot of those factors. So how has the coronavirus affected the M&A market for MSPs in particular as a result?
I think we're going to see a lot less strategics making investments right now, pure strategics, so pure MSP competitors, because everybody wants to sit on cash, right? Keep his cash as long as they can, because we all don't know how long this is really going to go on. I mean, there could possibly be a second wave of the virus. So everybody's conserving cash as much as possible. So those pure strategic buyers are kind of off the table right now. But who is really still on the hunt are private equity firms. So I get probably 4 emails a week, probably 1 call a week from a private equity firm that I've worked with in the past that says, Linda, have you got anything new for us? Do you have anything new for us? Because these people do have so much cash sitting on the sideline. I mean, there's estimates from anywhere from $1 to $2 trillion of what we call dry powder sitting on the sidelines. And these guys have to make investments. I think the other thing that's going to prevent strategics from getting into this space from a buying perspective is the price of debt has gone up. So if you go to the bank to finance, let's say the down payment or any other part of the acquisitions that you want to make, that's gone up a point or two. So the cost of doing business or getting debt has gone up, which means it's going to drive the valuations down. So where strategics are kind of driving valuations down, private equity firms are driving them back up. So it's a very, very interesting time. We'll see how long it lasts. I know there's a lot of sellers kind of sitting on the sidelines because their revenue is flattened out, or February, March, April have not been stellar months, which is understandable in this time. But there are still deals going on out there. I have a deal right now that fell apart. I had a buyer and seller together, and we were 2 weeks before the deal was going to close. And the first week of March, the whole deal fell apart because both the buyer and seller's largest client was an airline. And so, of course, we know what's going on with airlines during this COVID time. And so that wasn't a good marriage anymore. Whereas it was a good marriage back in January when we first started talking, it wasn't going to be a good marriage going forward. So that deal fell apart, but we were able to turn around and find another prospective buyer. And now we have a deal that supposedly will close by the end of July. So hopefully we'll see that happening. But my point here is there are still people out looking for deals. So even though people are kind of hunkering down a little bit right now, if you're really interested in selling, and especially if your revenue has maintained itself, it's still a great opportunity for those MSPs.
What are the dynamics of the market doing to valuations? Because I'm kind of imagining it could go two ways here. One is the buyers are on the hunt for distressed MSPs during this time, like maybe the one with the airline client and wanting to scoop them up for pennies on the dollar. The other is the strategic buyers are backing away. So there's fewer buyers, lots of sellers. And so that's driving the price down.
It is a supply and demand kind of thing. So there's less sellers out there right now. So if you weren't in the middle of a deal already, you're not coming to the table right now. Everybody's sort of hunkering down and waiting out this for a few months. Even if they're considering selling, they're just kind of sitting on the sidelines because nobody does want to sell in a down economy. But that said, if you're doing well, if you're maintaining your revenue or your revenue is going up because you just happen to be in a really good spot, and if private equity is something or direction that you want to head, those valuations have not gone down. The great thing about MSPs is we're in a space, thankfully, that people are requiring our services. There's been an uptick for a lot of people because they've had to get more people virtual, which means even the selling of more hardware and more services to get people virtual. And I think we've kind of gone through that wave already. So the question now becomes maintaining that customer base. And for those MSPs that are suffering a little bit or don't have a big enough staff that can maintain the support that the customers need at this pivotal moment, I think they will lose customers, and it will be a shifting of customers that goes on here over the next 6 months as well. And that could leave some MSPs vulnerable. And I don't think anybody raises their hands and says, hey, I'm in a distressed situation right now. I think they quietly reach out to somebody that they trust and say, hey, is there any way we can work together? And that's kind of how those deals happen, or they're very quiet about it. So interesting times, but I think we're going to come out of this. I think we'll hopefully be out of this in the fall. And I think there will be a pent-up demand at that point in time where there would have been a lot of sellers that have been sitting on the sidelines and have kind of been waiting because their revenue keeps increasing. I mean, I've talked to so many people that said, you know what, I just want to wait a little longer because my revenue continues to go up. And the longer this goes on, I think the more I can get for their company. I think they're all sitting there going, oops, did I miss a window? They're all silently sitting there and waiting. And I think there's going to be a mass exit here come later this year, beginning of next, as we get back to normal again, where people who've kind of put their sales process on hold are now going to come back to the market.
What do you think is driving that desire to sell? Obviously, you're saying that their sales are going up, and so they realize financially it's a good time to sell. But is there anything else in the market that's driving that?
There's so much consolidation going on with MSPs and with VARs and ISVs in general. That's not going to stop. And the larger you are, the more attention you'll get by the vendors. And it's these smaller players that are just constantly being pushed out. Some people realize that unless they become part of something larger, their longevity is potentially in jeopardy. So I think that's motivating a lot of people, to be honest.
Now, if you're an MSP and you're thinking that you want to sell when the market comes back, or that you want to start preparing to sell, how do you figure out where you're at right now? How do you figure out how much you're worth, where your weak points may be, what you need to work on?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it's something that pops up a lot with the MSPs and VARs that I speak to, because there's no real easy way to determine your company value. I mean, if you owned a home, you could go out onto Zillow every day of the week and you know exactly on that day what your home is worth. Same thing with a car. You could go out to CarMax or any one of these other services and plug in some information. You know immediately what your car is worth. But how do you really value your company? And, you know, I remember I was at a Microsoft event a couple of years ago and somebody got up on stage and said, you know, if you're an O365 partner, you can be worth 21 times EBITDA. And I'm thinking, oh my God, that is so not true. I mean, maybe you had a ton of intellectual property and just were killing it. Maybe you could come close to something half of that, but certainly not 21X. And so partners hear that and they get this really very unrealistic expectation of what their company's worth. Or they'll get on a broker call and a broker will say, hey, you know, you're worth 10X EBITDA. Well, they were talking about a $30 million company. You can't compare yourself. If you're $3 million, you can't compare a $3 million company to a $30 million company. And I kept coming across that where there were very unrealistic expectations, or people just had no idea at all what their company was worth. So when I wrote the book, and I'm a numbers person in a former life, an accountant in a former life, I realized I need to come up with a way where partners can value their company. So after looking at all the multiples that were being achieved and based upon revenue and based upon other metrics, including recurring revenue and the amount of revenue that went to the bottom line, I created a tool which is called the Value Maximizer. And by taking this assessment, I think there's like 30 questions there. The tool will actually give you the value of your company. But more importantly, it will also give you the value where you're leaving money on the table. It's important to know what your company's worth. It's equally important, if not more so important, to know what you can do to make your company better. And so this tool goes through these 8 value drivers and it ranks you in each one of those areas. And as I created this tool, I went out, I got the opinions of many, many buyers and had them rank these different metrics and what was important to them. So some of them were strategic, some of them were private equity groups, and I combined the two and they came out some valuation metrics, and I use that in the tool and it's constantly being updated. You can go out to rosebizinc.com/assessment, or if you just go out to rosebizinc.com, the homepage, just look in the footer and you'll see assessment down there. You do need a code. Jennifer, for your team, we're going to make that code PC 2020. So to start the assessment, you need to start with the code. If you get the book, Get Acquired for Millions, the code is in the book as well. The assessment and the book sort of go hand in hand. So I really recommend that if you want to take the assessment and learn how to increase those 8 value drivers, as we talk about in the assessment, to get the book. And it's a process. It's not something that can be done overnight. Even when I sold my last company, it took me 3 years to get it to a point where I felt really comfortable and I could get the most value out of it. So I really encourage partners to take this assessment, and it's free.
That's great. Thank you for offering that resource, and I'll put the link in the show notes. Linda, in your book, there is so much. I mean, you cover so many topics. I think it's quite comprehensive. We've had time to dig into a few of the things today. If there's anything that we missed that you wanted to share with MSPs, what would it be?
I think to be as educated as you possibly can in as advanced a state as possibly that you can would be the best thing for you. Never go into a deal blindly. Just because somebody pops up at your front door and says, hey, I'm very interested in buying you, having one buyer at the table is almost like having no buyers at the table, because you have nothing that you can leverage in the deal, right? And I always believe that if you can get multiple buyers to the table, that's when you have the opportunity to increase your company value, and not only the value, but the terms that you get for the deals. That's a whole other thing. But two purchase prices can look exactly the same on the outside, but when you look in terms of how they're structured on the inside, can completely be different. One can be so much better than the other. So it's really understanding what your company's worth and then understanding the deal terms and how to make the most out of those deal terms.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Linda.
Thanks, Jennifer. It was great being here.
That was Linda Rose, author of Get Acquired for Millions. In today's show notes, I'll put links to Linda's website, her LinkedIn profile, the blog post she mentioned about the Rule of 40, another blog post with her data and analysis on how COVID-19 has affected the M&A market, her book, of course, and the link to the Value Maximizer assessment that you can take for free. Now remember, you need the code to get the assessment for free, and I won't be putting it in the show notes, so remember this. Here's the code. PC2020. PC2020. That's the code for getting your free assessment at the Value Maximizer assessment link. So for all those links, hop over to the show notes at ovic.com/franklymsp/065. And that's a wrap. Till next time, this is Jennifer Tribe. Thanks for listening.
Frankly MSP, brought to you by Ovic Networks, the most efficient and profitable way to manage your clients' networks.